Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Ye chako tvangu pale dhamme janayasi. Ime dhamma ekanta nibidaya viragaya nirodaya upasamaya abhinyaya sambodaya nibbanaya sangvatanti ti ekang sena upale dhavyasi ezo dhammo ezo vinayo etang sattusa sananti. Usually the custom, if you have a particular topic to talk about, to do a little bit of a chant, a little what is called a gatha, a saying of the Buddha, to introduce the talk. And the saying, which is one of my favourites, which many of you heard before, the Buddha's advice to Upali, repeated to Mahapajapati, sort of saying to Upali, whatever dhammas which you know lead certainly, ekanta, just like one ending, lead certainly to nibbida, to viragda, the fading away of things, to nirodha, to cessation. The things which lead to upasama, the peaceful, quiet states of mind, to abhinya, just the real deep knowledge, and to Sambodhi, enlightenment knowledge, and Nibbana itself. It leads to those seven things that you can know for sure, Upali, that this is the Dhamma, this is the Vinaya, this is the teachings of the Buddha, the Sattu. And there's a powerful statement there which actually shows that if there's ever any doubt in your mind about what is the Dhamma, what is the Vinaya, what is the teachings of the Buddha, you can always go back to that wonderful statement that if it's a teaching of the Buddha, if it's the Vinaya, it leads to these things, the Nibbida. Nibbida is just the revulsion from the world, the turning away. In a little article I was writing recently, I called it that samsara's ejection seat, which actually pushes you away out of samsara, like the ejection seat of a car or of a aeroplane. And that leads to the fading away of the world, which leads to sort of cessation of things, which leads to this upasama, this quietness, this settling down, the ending of business, which leads to this deep understanding, the abhinya, which leads to sambodhi, enlightenment knowledge, and Nibbana itself. If it leads to those seven things, you can know it's Dhamma, it's Vinaya. You know it's Samadhi practice. You know it's keeping the Eightfold Path practice. You know it's keeping the Kho Wat practice, if it leads to those things. So that becomes your litmus test, the way you can find out whether what you're doing is correct or not. And in particular, it shows just how one's understanding, one's insight, one's wisdom sort of should lead to those things. And in particular, I'm focusing on those middle terms, especially upasama, the quietness, the tranquility. If it truly is wisdom and insight, if it is the teaching of the Buddha which you've gained perspective on, then it has to lead to that quietness of mind. The reason I'm saying this is because, again, during my retreat I was looking at the Kosambiya Sutta in the Majjhima. I think it's maybe number 48, I might be wrong. 48th Sutta of the Majjhima Nikaya, where it says one of the ways you can tell whether it's right view, especially the right view of an Aryan, it says if it, by putting into practice that right view, if it leads to peaceful states of mind. Powerful little teaching there. Because everyone's got right view, so they think. But does it lead to quietness, to peace, to tranquility? And your view, the way you look at things, what does that lead to? Because the whole purpose of coming to a monastery like this is to get that calmness, that peace, to get the insight so you can be even more peaceful. We're here for Nibbana, for the ending of things, for tranquility, for what the Buddha said, Sabbe Sankhara Samatha, for the quietening down of all sankharas. As it says in the chart we do at funerals, Anicca Sankhara, impermanent of all conditioned things, Tezang Upasamo Sukho, the last line. The upasama of those things, the tranquilizing, the calming of those things, is happiness. So those beings who come here for happiness, the tranquility is that happiness, and the insight gives rise to that tranquility. So today's talk is going to be on just the dance between insights and quietness, just the way that one can use one's wisdom to calm the mind down, and use that calm mind to gain even deeper insight. So working together, this is an amazing, like, digging tool. Until one gets so deep into the mind, one comes up to the big insights, the deep insights. You know it's a deep insight if it causes this release from the world. So, whatever understandings we have about the Dhamma, whatever insights you've got so far, it doesn't matter if they're the insights of an Aryan yet, as long as they are in concordance with the Buddha's teachings. You should know that these insights can be used to lead to deeper states of peacefulness, to deeper states of freedom, to liberation. So we investigate what we're doing with insight. All that we've learned, all that we've known, all that we've heard about the Buddha's teachings, the things like anicca, the nature of things to disappear by themselves. So we can just leave things alone and just wait patiently. Because we know that this has to disappear. If we don't fuel samsara, if we don't fuel the hindrances, if we don't fuel restlessness, we know, because this is the wisdom, that these things, they have to disappear. That's why sometimes people get their deepest meditations when it's still a long time. They wait, and they wait, and they wait, until things slow down all by themselves. You know that whatever restlessness you have has to fade away. It's its nature, as long as you don't feed it. In that way that you can expect silence. Not expect, because I've been playing around with that word in the interviews. Expect is the opposite of inspect. Those are the antonyms. Expect and inspect. Expect is looking outside. Inspect is looking inside. And so we inspect these things. And when we inspect them, and we leave them alone, then you find that everything sort of calms down and becomes still. You can actually start to investigate what is the cause of restlessness. What is the cause of pain and problems? What is the cause of all the difficulties you face in this rains retreat or even in today? You investigate back to the source. You never go to where it leads. This is a problem. If I do this, if I do that, blah, 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 what will happen next? I've got to do this, I've got to fix that. Find out where that problem came from. Go to its origin. This is that work of the mind which goes to the source. So whatever difficulty and problem you have, find out why, what caused this. You see its arising factors, as it says in the Satipatthana. So if it's a state of like restlessness, or it's a state of anger, or a state of depression, a state of being fed up, or you're not really being satisfied with what's going on, find out where that came from. When you actually investigate back to the source, no sooner or later you come to the source and realize this is just a projection. It's called papancha. It's come from the vipalasas, the perversions of perception. We're looking a lot at the thing we call mindfulness. I was saying to a few people this evening, I'm thinking one day of writing a little booklet on the myth of mindfulness. Because for most people it is mythical. What they think is mindfulness, this bare attention to the present moment, it's not bare attention at all. You know my teachings, reflecting the Buddha's words on the vipalasas. By the time this attention comes up, You've already been changing, selecting, filtering, twisting and turning the truth, so by the time it comes up as this image in your mind, it's untrustworthy. To go back to the source of things, you have to be able to allow the hindrances to disappear, find out why. And then you realize just the way that your mind deceives you, how thoughts, as one of the Anagarikas reminded me, I call the thoughts the work of the Dodgy Brothers. Very uncertain, you cannot trust them at all. Perception is in the same business of twisting and turning the truth to suit what you want to find out. So this is where we use those teachings. Imagine if we put that teaching of Vipalasa's into practice. This which I'm experiencing now, I cannot trust. You don't know if this is true or not, or whether the perversions are being in place. So any possibility of craving cannot come up because you don't know what's happening. You don't know where this has come from. Any possibility of anger or ill will cannot come up because you don't know what that person said or what that person did. You can't even trust your own memory of that event. So all those projections, the papancha which comes up, you just give away. You abandon. They cannot sustain themselves because you've taken away their foundation of thinking that you're right. It's wonderful when we can let go in such a way. We can let go of the hindrances because we can't trust anything. We let go, we just watch. Not believing, not disbelieving. Just watching. And you can't do anything. You've got no data to do things. If that's really wisdom, that will lead to peacefulness. It'll lead to, first of all, to nibbida, this revulsion towards this way of the mind which takes up the objects of consciousness and works on them and creates these edifices of proliferation, thoughts and arguments which create so much suffering in your life. Those thoughts can be of other monks, or they can be of yourself, give rise to frustration, give rise to measurement. Better, worse, the same. This is good, this is no good. All that sort of stuff, does that lead to peace, to freedom? No. But if you stop all that measuring, all that papancha, because you've gone to the source and see it's got no source, it's like a bubble and you prick that bubble, and it bursts and there's nothing left. When there's nothing left, you get a great sense of peacefulness. A lot of times that our wisdom practice is piercing through the illusions of life. You pierce through the illusion of sex, there's nothing there. It's just a burning of the senses. People in the world celebrate that. There's passion. There's happiness. And we convince each other it's happiness. Because everyone says it's happiness. Everyone says it's pleasurable. Because they say it's pleasurable, because we've been brainwashed into thinking it's pleasurable, of course it appears as pleasurable. And so the conditioned ignorance and delusion keeps on going. That's why I always remember one of the suttas where, I forget who the monk was, but there was one monk walking with Venerable Ananda who had a lot of lust. Who was it? And Ananda said, Wangisa, that's right, Wangisa. And Wangisa said, what's happening here? And all Ananda said, it's just a perversion of perception. So, you know, what you're actually seeing there and experiencing is not a truth. It's all being bent. Because if you really saw truly, you'd see there's nothing there to enjoy. It's just a burning of the senses, an excitement rather than insight. And so because of that, if you go to the heart of things, the truth of things, it gives you nibbida towards that. Sexuality, fantasies, passions. It's just, why bother with that? There's no happiness there at all. Real insight leads to a sense of freedom from that. It's an amazing thing to be free, you know, even from sexuality in the world. So many people are caught in that net. And from the point of view of someone who is free, you see that and it's just like this people being in a zoo, being prodded and poked, having no freedom at all, being bound within the bars of passion and sexuality, and knowing nothing else. And sort of, if one can get out of those bars, escape from that prison, and see from outside, you can see just how painful that all is. If it's true insight, it leads to passionless. It leads to vivarga. And see, some of all the things which one thinks about, one comes to the basis of thinking, and just to see just how uncertain it all is. Your thinking is based on perceptions, which is influenced by views, and you cannot trust it, because you can't trust it. Every thought which comes up, you just let go. One of the insights I got many years ago was just into the uncertainty of my thinking, my thoughts, realizing how powerful it had been conditioned. So much so that I couldn't trust the veracity of any thought. When that insight came up, and I couldn't trust the veracity of any thought, not even that one, just the whole thinking process just ground to a halt. It's like a fuse had been blown, like the electric fuse is blown and all the lights go out. And the fuse through which like thought can manifest had been blown and thinking stopped. Marvellous, beautiful experience of not being able to think for hours. And just in its place, of course, you've got peace and bliss and all that sort of stuff. So when you go to the source of things and you find wisdom, that leads to these amazing states. And that's how you know it was wisdom, because of its result. It leads to nibbida, to things, just actually to revulsion, to vivarga, then fading away. Cessation in that last simile, the thought ceased. And leading to upasama, what happens when things cease? That quietness, tranquility. Fortunately, it didn't lead to the other last things, nibbana, but it was good for the time being. But at least it was leading to an immense of understandings, which you could test were true because of what they did to you. And as we, it's not only just has it its effect on your meditation, it's just your effect even on your daily life. It's amazing when you don't trust your thoughts. You can't argue with anybody. If you argue, you just argue for fun, but you don't take it seriously. You don't take it back and allow yourself to be tortured in your hut afterwards. How many times, or what is said, or what is done, do you take back to your hut afterwards and brood over it and think over it? That is called papancha. You're buying in to the dodgy brothers, selling you the old bomb of a car called your thinking. You're always believing that. Imagine what it'd be like. Just imagine if you can't actually do it. You completely sort of discarded all this thinking business. It's just like conventional reality, not really real. You can't really take it to be any significant truth. It's just signposts. It's not the real destination. It's just a menu. It's not the food. All these similes we have. Imagine if you really did that. You stopped thinking. How would your meditation be? You couldn't even think it was a good meditation or a bad meditation. Those words wouldn't even come up. You couldn't really think whether it was half an hour or 10 minutes or 10 hours meditation. That just couldn't come up. You couldn't have any fantasies or expectations or these interruptions which happen in your meditation. Everything would just go silent. Try and see. See what happens. Quick and easy way to get into deep meditation. All of these tricks of the trade using wisdom. These are like the impermanence and insubstantiality, the anatta, the non-selfness of your thinking. Even the non-selfness of the doer and the knower. As the Buddha said in the Anattalakkhana Sutta, all these kattas, they're not me, not mine, not a self. So why do you try and control them? You're controlling things which don't belong to you. Do you ever get frustrated when you can't get your own way? Of course you can't get your own way. Why not accept you're not going to get your own way from the beginning? When you've except you're not going to get your own way in the beginning, you give up. And then all the peace in the world comes to you. What do we just chant? Api yehi sampayogo du ko, pi yehi vipayogo du ko. in the Dhammacakka Sutta. Separation from what you like is suffering. Association with what you don't like is suffering. So how can you solve that suffering? Not by more willpower, not by more manipulating, not by more doing to try and get what you want. The Buddha said that's impossible. So let go of wanting. The non-self should actually show you, this is not mine, nothing to do with me. This is just goes according to nature, that's all. This process of dependent origination, this process of nature of the world, it's beyond you, beyond the self. There's no self in there. So when we have that wisdom of anatta, what the Buddha called anatta sanya, the perception of non-self, when we're doing our meditation, when we're eating our food, when we're working in the monastery, when we're coming for our interview, when we're listening to a talk, there's no one listening to this talk. So why do we try and grab onto these things? Why do we try and own our experiences and keep them and preserve them like baggage in our mind? Why don't we just realize that this doesn't belong to us, it's nature coming and going. So we abandon, we give up, and then we have this amazing sense of freedom and peace. You know what it's like when you give up your possessions? You always feel more free when you give up something. The more you give up control, the more freedom you feel. That's why renunciation, you know, that's the teaching of the Buddha, that's the Vinaya, that's the Dhamma, because it leads to these beautiful states of peace and freedom, real happiness. So part of the practice is renouncing as much as we can. We don't keep the past. We don't even keep the present. As soon as it comes up, we let it go. It's an amazing way of meditating, this present moment awareness. You just don't keep anything. It's renounce in the present, renounce, renounce, renounce. Always throwing things away. Trouble is that our minds are used to accumulating possessions, material first of all, and then spiritual possessions, recording all our great meditations, preserving all our great insights in this great notepad of our mind. All the great meditations, we take these photographs to remind ourselves and put them on the wall, like certificates of achievement from university, keeping them all. I remember when I, as a monk, first went back to see my mother, and I got all my university certificates out, got my MA out, and I tore it up and threw it in the bin. I'm a monk, I don't need it anymore. So half an hour later, my mother never said anything. I saw her on the kitchen table, sellotaping it all together again. I felt so awful. It's good for me, but not for your mother. She's proud of those things. I felt so awful. But anyway, for you, tear that all up. Tear the past up. No matter what happened a moment ago, you tear that up, throw it away. Renunciation is one of the dhammas of the Buddha. Why is it a dhamma of the Buddha? Because it leads to this nibbida, to viraga, things fade away. It leads to cessation of things, cessation of the past. Have you done with your past yet? Are you done with what happened earlier today? Are you still carrying around burdens? Sometimes that's why we can't meditate. Carrying around our old experiences, wanting them back again. Carrying around our failures as well as our successes. Throw both away. So you don't know if you're a good meditator or a bad meditator. That's all to do with the past. Throw everything away. Renunciation. And then there's freedom and there's peace. And that's how you get the great meditations. It's anatta, it's not yours anyway, so it's easy to throw things away when you realize it's not yours. The Buddha said you can't control the five khandhas. Rupa, you can't control this body, you can't control your Vedana. Please give me all nice Vedana, none of the horrible Vedana, please. Always get what I like, not what I don't like. Can't do that. So just, as they say in the jail, cop it sweet. Nice Vedana, unnice Vedana. At least the mind doesn't need to bother with those things. The mind can be at peace. That's where you can do something through letting go. And that way the mind is always at peace, always happy, always content. The happiness we're talking about is the mental happiness. no hope with bodily happiness, or with ear happiness, or nose happiness, or tongue happiness, or sight happiness. You never hear what you want to hear in this joint. Sometimes you do, but often you don't. You never see what you want to see. Sometimes you do, but often you don't. You can't control those five senses, so you renounce. The Buddha said that. Renounce everything. When you let go of everything, first of all, renounce the five senses. You renounce the five senses, you get to anagami. Renounce the sixth sense, then it's arahant all the way. So this is giving up, letting go. It leads to peace, it leads to bliss, the bliss of peace. So we do a lot of anatta sanya. It's not mine, I don't own anything. Everything in your heart is just borrowed. Even your body is just borrowed from the four elements. You have to give it back to the four elements, earth, air, fire and water, that's all it is. What you put in your body, the food, is just four elements. What comes out the other end is just four elements. Just this process, that's all. Nothing, not a person in there, not me, not mine. It makes life so simple, so peaceful. You don't get excited or depressed at your food. Just eating four elements, that's all. What's on the menu today? Four elements. What's for sweets? Four elements. What's for breakfast? Four elements. That's all we do. Eat four elements. We have four meals a day. Earth, air, fire and water. That's what happens. So when we look at it that way, it sort of gives us a sense of peace and tranquility. It's not me, not mine, not a self. Or we can do dukkha sanya, that's suffering. Life is suffering. Oh, that's why I'm hurting. It's all right. See, the Buddha said this is where it's supposed to be. What do you expect? Just shut up and stop complaining. We think, oh, we can somehow make it better. Somehow we can get like a healthy body. Sometimes we think that, you know, you've got the worst deal when it comes to bodies or minds. Now, just all bodies are suffering. Some a lot of suffering, some small suffering, but it's all suffering. That's what I've been telling the lay people recently about just how what craving is, what desire is to swap one suffering for another suffering. The anagarikas want to become novices. I'll guarantee that when you leave the kitchen, you leave a great heap of suffering. And then when you come upstairs to be a novice, you'll get novice suffering. You're just exchanging one suffering for another type of suffering. Then when you become when you become a monk, you'll get young monk suffering. The novice suffering would have been disappeared. Now you're a young monk, you get young monk suffering. And as a young monk, you think, oh, maybe when I get 6 or 7 ways, I can come here and go there and travel around. And then you get travelling monk suffering. And afterwards, yeah, you become an abbot. And you get abbot suffering. And you always have suffering wherever you go. So this is just that nature of life. Even in jhana, you get jhana suffering. All of the existence, the Buddha said, is not worth clinging on to. Was it sabbe dhamme nalang abhinavesaya? No dhammas at all is worth clinging on to, holding on to. Buddha's advice to Venerable Moggallana. And when we understand that, we can actually just start letting go. If we really understand it, if it really is wisdom, and we really put it into practice, then it should lead to these amazing things, nibbida, just abandoning things, revolted from things, just turning away from things. It leads to viraga, just the world disappears, things fade away. We become monks who have very little possessions. I'm not talking about what you've got in your heart. I'm talking about what you've got in your mind. Your mind doesn't possess your body anymore. Your mind doesn't possess your happiness or suffering anymore. Your mind doesn't possess your future or your past anymore. It hardly even possesses the present moment. It doesn't own anything. It's possessionless. Really possessionless. So what happens when we let go? So it's not mine, it's dukkha. So why hold on to things which are dukkha? It's like having an apple. One looks at that apple you've got in your bowl for your lunch. and it's rotten. It's full of maggots, or maggots' eggs. Sometimes you try and cut away the rotten part so you've got something nice to eat. But you look at it, whole apple, to its core, to its edges, up and down, all through, it's rotten. What would you do with such an apple? Would you just keep it out of equanimity? Or maybe munch it out of metta? Or give it to someone else because of compassion? What would you do with a rotten apple? You just throw it away. Put it in the compost. You wouldn't keep it or give it to someone else. Why do stupid people practice compassion and give each other rotten apples? That's all compassion is, in this world mostly. But instead of doing that, we throw these things away. That's called nibbida. And actually you see just how dukkha just permeates just the whole of samsara, the whole of the five khandhas, everything. When you have really that wisdom, very, very strong, then it's easy, this letting go. Because there's no way in the world that you would hold on to things which were by their very nature suffering. So we see that, we use that as insight, and so that when we're meditating or we're living this life, we don't cling to anything. Especially start to see this with your thoughts. Thoughts are dukkha. Gave a simile. You know, it's not the simile from the suttas, but I adapted the Buddha similes. Just like a young man or a young woman, fond of adornments, dressed up ready to go out at night, found themselves with a carcass of a dead dog slung around their neck. They'd be disgusted. They'd be repelled. They'd be upset. They want to get rid of that. In the same way, I said some years ago, it's like a person, a meditator, finds a beautiful, clean mind, has been had all these thoughts strung around them. Just like a dead carcass of a dog, because the thoughts are dead things, old ideas, old conditionings. And you're slinging that rubbish around your beautiful, radiant mind. So when you look at it that way, the thoughts are dukkha. You get this patikula sannya, this revulsion perception towards even your thinking. So you sit down there in the hut, and just the thoughts stop. You don't buy into them anymore. More than not buying into them, you're revolted by them. They're just these rotten things, dukkha, which you allow to come into your mind, to disturb you. In the fire sermon, this is one of the meanings of the mind being on fire, adita. It's on fire with raga, with dosa, with moha, the stuff of thinking. So we let it all go. Either thinking is raga or it's dosa, mostly it's moha, stupid delusion thinking. So we let all that thinking go, because we see it as dukkha. What happens next? If you could do that, you'd stop thinking. No thought would manage to be able to find a foothold in your mind. You can only find a foothold if you welcome it, if you prepare a place for it, because you welcome thinking. If you don't welcome it anymore, you get so quiet and so peaceful. Meditation becomes so easy. Just sit there without thinking. And peacefully, just the mind goes into deep states. Never measures anymore, never judges. Thinking stops. Beautiful. So we're using these insights of the Buddha, anicca, dukkha, anatta, as a means to teach us how to be calm and peaceful, to help us with our meditation. And also we're testing out what these things really mean. We're actually reinforcing our wisdom, testing it, proving it, strengthening it, because we find from experience that when we really apply perceptions of dukkha, perceptions of non-self, perceptions of impermanence, when we really apply the proper things, then they always make the mind still and peaceful. That's a sign of insight, the sign of wisdom. Then we know that, that is the Dhamma, that is the Vinaya, that is the teaching of the Enlightened One, because it works. all the ideas and insights which you might have, if they don't create that beautiful feeling of peace and happiness, freedom, contentment, then they're not real insights, they're not real wisdom. This is how you know. I say the test of insight is the degree of peace which it gives you. The test of peace is how clearly you see. That's how we know how wise we are. That's how we know how deep our meditation is. So by these standards, one can have some idea of the practice in a monastery such as this. One has these extra tools of insight teaching samadhi, insight deepening the samadhi. And as the samadhi deepens, so the insight gets more profound. And the Buddha said again and again and again that it is samadhi paccaya yathabhutiyana dasanam. It's from samadhi, these deep states of calm, that the real seeing of things as they truly are arises. This is a deep insight. And so it's not from, the Buddha never said sati paccaya yathabhutiyana dasanam, which if he did say would translate from mindfulness, you see things as they truly are. No, that's not true. From samadhi. And once one gains those deep states of samadhi, the peaceful states, that makes even deeper wisdom. And the deeper wisdom makes the deeper samadhi states possible. So one uses wisdom all the way in this way of getting deep meditation. We know it's got that insight there, if one could achieve jhanas. The sign of insight, deep insight, is how calm you can make the mind. And I'm sorry, but if somebody says they're enlightened or they've got this great insight but they can't achieve in first jhana, I don't know what they're talking about. See, insight causes letting go. And it's the letting go which causes those deep states of meditation. The two go together. You can't separate them. So as one develops those insights, the path to meditation gets easier and easier. As you get, the path of meditation gets easier and easier, the insights get stronger and stronger, deeper and deeper. And you get this beautiful little path of these two things supporting one another, working together, digging deeper and deeper and deeper, until you get the great insights, real understanding of dukkha. Just how it permeates everywhere. There's some parts of you which you still cling to as a sense of self and me. Places where dukkha has yet to be seen existing. Hopes, fantasies, wishful thinking, that some place, somewhere, you will have a place free of dukkha. Some monastery, some cave, lay people, some perfect relationship, some heaven, some place. But with the deepening of your meditation, you see there is no place at all. That's why the Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths. The power of that first truth, the suffering of dukkha. He said in that Dhammacakka, it's parinyayam, to be known fully. To see just how it permeates every part of any possible existence. If there's knowing, there is dukkha. As the Arahat Bhikkhuni Wajiri said, when asked by Mara, who is this person? Who does she think she is? So there is no person, just like a chariot made up of parts. All there is, she said, is dukkha arising and dukkha passing away. That's all that there is. Dukkha arising and dukkha passing away. What you're experiencing now is just dukkha arising, dukkha passing away. What you experienced all your life so far is just dukkha arising, dukkha passing away. Your whole future, your prospects, your destiny after this moment is just more dukkha arising, more dukkha passing away. That's all there is. What a beautiful summation of samsara. If you want to know what the meaning of life is, just dukkha arising and dukkha passing away. If you want to read somebody's future, tell them, I can see your future. there'll be just dukkha arising and dukkha passing away. And then you'll be the greatest fortune teller, always accurate. And so when you see that, what's the result of that? It's nibbida. You just had enough of dukkha arising, dukkha passing away. A natural cessation starts to happen. It's not me deciding to turn off samsara. Even this me is already gone. It's just samsara turning itself off. Nibbida is inherent in the process. If you see dukkha arising, dukkha passing away is all there is, the most wonderful experience you had, the worst experience, basically they're all of the same kind. You made distinctions there, but really all there was, ever will be, is this dukkha arising, dukkha passing away. In this moment, as in all moments, just different forms of dukkha, that's all. But essentially, dukkha arising, dukkha passing away. When you see that clearly, all of your striving, all of what you want, whether you're wanting jhanas, wanting stream winning, wanting to get peaceful, wanting to come here, wanting to go there, what do you want that for? You're just wanting is dukkha. Wanting just different forms of dukkha. You could truly see that completely as the Nanwajiri saw it. You'd be liberated through non-clinging. Arahat, the whole job finished in this talk, in this moment. See, all there is dukkha arising, dukkha passing away. Nothing more than that. How can you ever cling anymore? How can you ever want anything anymore? Stupidity. Delusion. So just let go. Or rather, you don't desire to let go. It's the result of such deep seeing. The deep insights causes the deep upasama. The deep tranquility. So deep that everything calms down and stops. Viraga. It's not just thinking fades away. It's not just a few things. The whole of samsara fades away into ceasing. Nirodha. There's nothing left to keep this whole process going anymore. That becomes abhinya. That becomes sambodhi. Enlightenment knowledge. And that becomes nibbana and parinibbana. The end is all finished. That's with a big understanding of dukkha. See, that's all there is. A big understanding of anicca. Seeing whole universes just fade away. It was great having a bit of teaching in science. It's just to know just this whole universe came from nothing, will go to nothing. The universe is subject to cessation, will end. Conservation of energy is a myth. It's just a local effect, as they say in science. Eventually, all energy just stops, finishes. The big whimper of the universe, or the big crunch, going back into nothing, where energy and time have no more meaning. Just to see just how much can cease. It's not just seeing rise and fall, the great myth of impermanence which is foisted on this Western world, but to see impermanence as whole universes just fading away and vanishing. As said in a recent article, just like what people think is impermanence, it's just like the waves on an ocean going up and going down, rise and fall, but that's not real impermanence. Real impermanence is when the whole ocean disappears and vanishes and takes with it the landmass which contains it. That really is spooky. That really blows your mind apart. What you thought was substantial and solid. So you say in science, just the floor on which you sit on, there's nothing there. It's just a few atoms. In those atoms, it's mostly space. There's nothing under your seat. It's just forces balancing, which stop you falling through. It's an illusion of solidity. In the same way, there's just nothing in this four elements, this mind. It's completely empty, just a process, an empty process, forces balancing, moving. That's all there is there. Because it's empty of an essence, therefore it's subject to full cessation. There's nothing there to begin with, which is solid. So, everything can cease without remainder. Powerful impermanence, powerful emptiness, and see in that degree there's nothing left. Again, you don't cling to anything. When it's all going to go, you let it go. Seeing that much allows things to cease and disappear. A lot of times in our meditation we come across barriers of fear. Barriers because we're seeing nature sort of showing itself to us, but we're not ready to see the truth. We're not ready to see the fact that there's going to be nothing left. We don't need to preserve things. It's such a myth to think that we've got to preserve this earth for future generations. The very nature of this earth is to wipe everything out. Everything, every species, every work of art, nothing can be preserved for eternity. The whole thing is falling apart. Don't have to say about global warming or pollution. This is nature of the world to do this. You try and stop it, rather not stop it but slow it down, but it's a nature to self-destruct. This is impermanence. It's true nature. When everything self-destructs, there's nothing to left to hold on to. That's where we get so peaceful. Where we can allow things to cease without fear. And the deep teaching, the deep insight into non-self. There was never anyone here. There wasn't a doer. There wasn't a knower. Just an empty process. Seeing that is what is meant in the suttas when it says, house builder, you have been seen. Sense of self. When there's a me, there is a mine. When there's a mine, there's a controlling. When there's a mine, there's a sense of ownership. The sense of that you've got a duty to manipulate, to manage what you believe is your possessions. You may even be stupid enough to think this is your monastery. And so you're very concerned about what happens in this monastery. In truth, you know you don't own this monastery. You're just a passer through. We've only got visitors in this monastery. Always had visitors, never any permanent residents at all. Understanding that, we don't cling. We can let go. It's not me, not mine. We can let go of our body. Just passing through, that's all. When there's a mine, we have a lot of suffering. When it's not mine, let go. So we have peace. It's the ending of things, the settling of the problem, fading away, peacefulness, enlightenment. Now go to your mind. See that that's not me, not mine, not a self also. The last bastion of suffering. Some people can let go of their body, but they can't let go of their mind. Their thoughts, their ideas, their intelligence. If you live long enough, you get dementia. All you intelligent people will start to forget things. All of you who've learnt these chants, they will slip away from you. All of you who've learnt Pali, what a waste of time, you forget it all. It's not really a waste of time, I encourage that, but you know what I mean in this context. So you let go of your mind. Allow it to disappear. You allow everything to disappear. Allow it to stop. That again is called Nirodha Samapatti. The end of perception, the end of feeling. Everything disappeared. You can only do that if you understand there's nothing there to really control. There's no me, no mind, no self. So you can see those very deep insights. These are enlightenment insights. Those are the ones which lead to great stillness, to great letting go. That's when you really get abhinya, the parama abhinya, the highest abhinya, the deep knowings. It's not just the deep knowings of anicca, anicca, dukkha, anatta. It's a deep knowing of nibbana and parinibbana, the ending of all things. So this is what it means by the insights when you put them into practice at all levels. Just the ordinary insights, they give ordinary peace. But ordinary peace is worthwhile because it gives even deeper insights. And those deeper insights give deeper peace. And the deeper peace give deeper insights. And this gradual path, this gradual training just burrows in until you get a fascinating, powerful insights which create these amazing states of stillness and bliss. Stillness is bliss. As you go deeper and deeper, you soon get the biggies, the big ones. And that just destroys samsara in front of your eyes. You know the end of things. We always want to get things done, get things out of the way, so we can enjoy ourselves. Sometimes already people are thinking, get the rest of the retreat out of the way. Get this letter out of the way. Get this project out of the way. When it is out of the way, then I'll be okay. Never think like that. That's just the making of samsara, the house builder. What you really want to get out of the way is delusion. Get out of the way the delusion of a self. Get out of the way the delusion of sukha, happiness. Get out of the way the delusion of permanence. Get out of the way the delusion of a doer and a knower. Get that out of the way first. And everything else will automatically be got out of the way as well. You become someone, as they say, katang karaniyam, has done what needed to be done. All your work has been finished. And you can really be one who's truly retired. Retired from the world. And just like a pensioner, a workman, just waiting for their wages. Finished, complete. Is waiting for Parinibbana. So there's a little talk this evening based on the Buddha's advice to Upali. What was it again? Ye chako twang Upali dhamme jaliyasi. Upali, whatever dhammas that you know, ekanta nibidaya viragaya nirodaya upasamaya binyaya sambodaya nibbanaya sangvatantiti. Those dhammas which you know, which lead to nibbida, the ejection seat of samsara, turning away, revulsion from these things, which lead to them fading away, which lead to them ceasing, which lead to this tranquility, which lead to the deep knowing of abhinya, which lead to enlightenment knowing, which lead to nibbana. You can know for sure, Upali, that that is dhamma, that that is vinaya, that that is the teaching of the great teacher, the Buddha. So you know what insight is, and you know what Buddhism is. So put it into practice, and make those insights just so firm that they lead you to that same process of cessation. That's the end of the talk.
Sutipatthipanno
Bhagavato.